AgriTalk is brought to you by Full Scale from Helena. Grow strong returns this season with breakthrough foliar nutrition from Full Scale at Reproduction. Grains are under pressure. Energy prices are higher. Equities, you know what? Equities are doing what equities do. They're trading higher. It's all happening in the shadow of what happened in the nation's capital yesterday afternoon. And in the shadow of how Congress carried on with their assigned duties last night. Once again, guys, the sun came up this morning.
Live from the assumed calm after the storm via Farm Journal broadcast, this is AgriTalk. This morning we'll talk with Kevin Ross and Tim Barak. Then it's on to Ben Pratt, Senior VP for Government and Public Affairs at the Mosaic Company. And right after the news, Greg Henderson from Drovers, I'm handsome newsman Davis Michelson, and now the host of AgriTalk, Chip Lorre.
Thank you so much, Davis. Yeah, what a day. What a morning. What a series of events that took place in the nation's capital yesterday and into the night as Congress did what they are supposed to do. They did their duty. Yeah. Yeah. And there are many from both political parties that I think are delivering a very good message, very solid message, and that message is that the rioters did not win. They couldn't win.
Mm-hmm.
Pretty powerful what has happened, no question. So we're going to celebrate that a bit here this morning.
Yes. Yes.
Yeah.
I don't know. I've given it some thought. I mean, you know, the way the message was delivered was unacceptable. You know, you don't storm the buildings up there on Capitol Hill. Okay? You just don't do that. But I do feel like maybe there's a message there that politicians would do well to heed on some level. That sort of angst that brings people to that point, I feel like needs to be addressed and spoken to in some way.
Right.
And so, you know, in that way, a little bit, I'm curious to see the response here as the days go on from not just the Democrats, but also the Republican side, too, because it seems like everybody's sort of fleeing from President Trump at this point. People resigning and off they go, you know?
Right, right. And I would not, I'm not making a prediction here, but I would not rule out action to remove him from office before, you know, immediately.
Right.
Some of the comments that were made by President Trump, fanned the flames a little too hard, in my opinion.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
He was addressing a very enthusiastic crowd. And a crowd that included some professionals. These people have been all over the country participating in riots. Not protests, riots.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Well, there's a fine line between enthusiasm and fanaticism. And when you begin to blur that line, now you begin to look a little complicit.
Yeah.
In what comes next.
And for those that are hoping that there was some way that President Trump would make a run in 2024 for the presidency again, that is out of the question. That's leaving a bad taste in a lot of people's mouths at this point. We'll talk about it more with Tim and Kevin, but I'm going to start the conversation with those guys. It's an impromptu farmer forum. I felt like we needed to do something to get some farmer opinion here on the show this morning. We're going to have Tim Barak and Kevin Ross on, and I'm going to start with it was a sad day yesterday. We need to figure out how to go forward from here. So that's what we're going to be doing in the conversation with those guys. Then we're going to talk about Then we're going to have a good conversation about what is going on in the phosphate market.
Yes.
You've been talking a little bit about that, haven't you, Davis?
It's come up. It's come up from time to time.
It's come up. It's come up. We got Greg standing by. Let's get to the news.
Sure thing. Well, what kind of newsman would I be if I didn't announce Congress has certified Joe Biden as the 46th president following some pro-Trump supporters storming the chambers of Congress? Yesterday was always going to be a sensitive day, but it did end up being historic as lawmakers scrambled to egress their chambers as a mob broke windows and did other damage. Chip, we don't talk about this much. The total value of the entire cryptocurrency market has surpassed $1 trillion for the first time as Bitcoin skyrocketed through $37,700 overnight to hit a fresh record high. Bitcoin, which some call the new gold, is already up about 30% since the start of 2021. Analysts note many large institutional investors have been piling into that market looking to diversify. We don't talk about crypto all that much here.
Well, there's a reason for that.
Mm-hmm.
If I'm going to talk about something on the show, I want to feel like I at least have a halfway decent understanding of exactly what it is.
I'm glad you said that because I don't know anything about it either.
Okay, let's move on then. Hurry up.
Completely honest.
Brush that
incoming Senate
rug.
Majority Leader Chuck Schumer, $2,000 checks are one of the first things the new Senate does. Not sure if that's $1,400 besides the $600 already signed into law. Incoming Senate Ag Committee Chairwoman Debbie Stabenow said she would make it a top priority to facilitate establishment of an ag carbon market, and Tyson Foods resumes slaughter at Columbus Junction while Smithfield is looking to vaccinate all of its employees and has medical capabilities at its U.S. plants. Chip.
That is fantastic news about the Tyson plant down at Columbus Junction,
yeah.
Getting that back up and running. Let's bring in Greg Henderson, editorial director at Drovers. You know, we were missing that shackle space for the hog industry down at Columbus Junction so much, Greg. Let's just go down that path here for cattle. What is the situation, the status on shackle space for the cattle?
Yeah, absolutely, Chip. So, you know, last spring they drove the numbers down to about 60% of capacity because of that slowdown. And then by the end of the year, we ended up at running about 88% of total capacity. The way you do that is, for several weeks, they had to run at more than 100%.
Yeah.
When we say more than 100%, we're talking about they included Saturday kills. So
right.
Our capacity is based on that five-day work week. So when we look back at 2015, which was really the last time the cattle market was really good, and the packers, we had more capacity at that time, more capacity relative to the number of cattle we have. Now, and we've talked about it, the outlook being good for next year, that's because the supply of feeder cattle is down 2.5%, probably the lowest number since 2015 or within 6 years. So that means that packers then are going to be wanting cattle. The demand's going to be up. We talk about leverage. Leverage is going to shift to the cattle feeders slowly, and that's going to be good news for stocker operators and cow-calf producers as we move forward.
Oh yeah, yeah. We need to make sure that we've got plenty of kill space out there. And I love that there's more capacity coming online. And it's not just the 500 head per day. There's some smaller ones out there that are in development. I want to talk about those with you at some point, Greg, because I think this is it's a development that the industry really is looking for. So we need to talk about that at some point. Okay.
You bet. Thank you.
All right. That's Greg Henderson, editorial director at Drovers. We've got Kevin Ross and Tim Barak up next.
Hey.
It starts with a plan. That's why America's Conservation Ag Movement is inviting you to get your farm business ready for 2021 with a free resource stewardship planning guide. Get your free guide today at agweb.com/ACAM.
Welcome back to AgriTalk. I'm your host, Chip Flory. We've got Davis Michelson with us.
Davis
is, I'm sure, got some thoughts that he's going to want to add to the conversation that we're going to be having here in just a moment. And Farm Journal News Director John Harith is also going to be lurking out there. He may have some comments that he'll want to throw in as we have kind of an impromptu farmer forum. But after what happened in the nation's capital yesterday and continued into the night when Congress went back to the Senate chamber to finish up the business of the day, I thought it was really necessary for us to get some farmers on, some guys that really pay close attention to what is going on, and these two guys do. First, let's go over to Western Iowa, Kevin Ross. Kevin, thanks for joining us this morning. I know it's short notice, but boy, really appreciate you making the time, man.
Yeah, Chip, thanks for having me on. It's a tumultuous time, certainly in the country, and you know, in a lot of ways, it's embarrassing for our country, the leader of the free world, and not just in that office as president, but the leadership that our country needs to show and typically does show to see the things that happened yesterday and really have happened throughout this entire year. It seems like a lot of frustrations that have boiled to the top man, it's just sickening to see it.
Yeah. Yeah. Kevin, we're going to continue that conversation. Tim Burak, Northeast Iowa, joins us right now. Tim, welcome to AgriTalk, man. I know that as long as you've been watching politics and participating in politics in the state of Iowa and on a national level, this has got to be pretty heart-wrenching for you.
It's a sad day, Chip. It's a sad day for the country. It's a sad day for the administration. It's a sad day for the Trump family.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't think there's any question about that. We are starting to see some Republican congressmen. Adam Kinzinger of Illinois is the first Republican congressman to call for the 25th Amendment to be enacted, remove the president from his position, and pass it over to Vice President Mike Pence. These, obviously, Kevin, this is not how, I can't imagine, you know, I'm going to say it this way, and there's going to be people that say, are you kidding me? This is exactly how he saw it. But this can't be how President Trump saw the final days of his term.
You know, I absolutely can't think that would be the case. You know, and I want to make clear, Chip, when I'm speaking today too, I'm not speaking on behalf of NCJ and my position there. I'm speaking on behalf of a U.S. citizen and a farmer. And I don't think by any means anybody would want to see final days and whatever they do tarnished by any means. I think that's a thought process that's flawed. But this type of situation, you know, certainly, like I said, we've seen this throughout the entire year. I think it shows levels of frustration that are unheard of. And it's not just a one and two-sided thing. There are people frustrated in so many different ways. And I think it's a lot of different factors. And part of it's the fact that, you know, people need to get back to work and need to have interactions other than social media. Yeah. I mean, you know, I think there's a lot of things that we have out there and are seeing that are blasted out there, and people say anything, and we've got to get back to some level of human decency that can move us forward.
Yep. Amen. Tim, I've said to a few people in conversations to get their reaction, you know, when they say, I can't believe that something like this happened, my comment to a couple of them has been, well, haven't you been paying attention to what has been happening in this country since Memorial Day, roughly? They counter with, there's a difference between a police station or a police precinct in Portland and the Capitol building. Do you think that's true?
So you're asking for my comment on that, or you got more to say?
No, I'm asking for your comment on that.
Well, you know, you're half right. The issue isn't what building it was, even though other people will say. I mean, I can't none of us condone any of those events, whether it's a police station, whether it's the post office in Portland or in Minneapolis or in Kenosha or the Capitol. All of those things are wrong. So yeah. I condemn them all. But yeah. It was interesting to see how quickly it was condemned at the Capitol instead of all of the other events through the summer. And so I do stick to a little hypocrisy, but I'm not supporting anything that took place yesterday at the Capitol.
Right.
It's just right. The protest was fine, but, you know, they weren't going to change anything to start
yep.
with. The sadder thing to me is, besides the hypocrisy, and which it's easy to see, is that I believe Trump has taken both himself out and has taken his children out of the political game now for some time. And they actually had some potential.
Yeah.
And to see that is just sad. It's just sad how this ends. Now, Kinsey Gurr and the 25th Amendment, I think the fires are out. I don't think we need to go through that anymore. And 2 weeks, it's all over anyway, and we'll have a new president, and we move on, and we've got a new Senate, and we move on, and, you know, and how's that going to impact us? And it's, but the issue to me was people didn't get their day in court, shall we say. Literally, they didn't get their day in court. Every court right. rejected the concern with the election, and I think that's part of the problem. There was no hearing, and now if the Senate doesn't have any hearings on the election, the things will continue to fester for some time.
Right, right. Yeah, and the thing is, like you said, the courts threw out the attempts to go to look at some of these efforts or some of the questions. But I think what I hear you saying, Tim, is there is a large segment of the population out there that, even though the courts have thrown out the request to look at certain tampering, irregularities, stink that has happened at some of these polling precincts, they still want those answers. They still want an investigation into it, Kevin. The problem here, Kevin, is I don't know what it would take to satisfy the curiosity and to get people to trust the process again. And that's where we've got to get back to, right?
Yeah, you know, absolutely. And first of all, I want to echo Tim's comments on the cities that have seen this happen previously. And in the discussion about it being the Capitol building yesterday, is that different? I think I do think that's different to an extent, but not as Tim said, condemning all those types of actions, they're absolutely unacceptable. I think, yes, we have to get back to we all believe and all we want fair and honest, and we need fair elections. And I don't think as a citizen all across the U.S., I think everybody can say that that's exactly what they want. And but we have to trust other states and their processes. It's tough to do that. At the moment, you're 100% correct. There's a lot of people that are out there that don't feel that way right now. Somehow, within our country, we've got to come back together and say that, let this next Congress hopefully address some of these issues. It's setting up right now where you've got, a chance for someone else to sit up in there and lead, and this has to happen. People need strong leadership right now. And right now, Joe Biden's going to get his chance, right? He's going to get a chance to step up and take that reins. And I hope he's successful.
And we're all going to support him in those efforts to be successful.
Absolutely.
To make this country prosperous. But
we can't let this continue to go on.
Right. And I can't believe that this time is up. What we will do, guys, is we're going to continue this conversation at some point in the very near future, because there are some concerns out there with the policies that will be promoted under a Biden administration that we've got to talk about with you guys. Thank you so much, fellas. Tim Barak out of Northeast Iowa, Kevin Ross out of Western Iowa. We'll be back talking phosphates.
Time for Markets Now with the experts from Pro Farmer.
And joining us now is Pro Farmer editor Brian Grady. Beach, a lot of negative changes from yesterday going on in these grains.
Yeah, just some profit taking, I think, in here, Chip. You know, we've had the really strong run up in these markets and pulling back some soybeans, leading us to the downside this morning with double digit losses here mid morning. But, you know, I think in reality, where we close today and where we close tomorrow for the week and where we close the next several days after that's way more important than intraday price action today. But for now, the weekly export sales were paltry, near nothing for soybeans, and that's causing some profit taking in the market.
Yeah, no doubt about that. What about over in the wheat trade? I was looking for wheat to maybe, after leading to the downside yesterday, I was thinking, okay, the way the wheat trades might turn around and come back today, but it hasn't.
No, you know, I think we talked about it earlier this week, I believe, on here. But, you know, wheat, if things are going to really charge higher again, and wheat looks like a value buy in an area where funds could pump some money into the long side of that market. But on days like today, where everything is weaker across the grain and soy complex, wheat just doesn't have the fundamental support, and it has a tendency to weaken.
Right. Okay, take us over to the livestock trade quick. What's going on?
Relatively quiet, to be honest with you. Live cattle market narrowly mixed, waiting on cash trade to develop there. There's just been a light test so far. The weakness in the corn market is leading to moderate to strong gains in the feeder cattle. So we talked about that earlier, too, where, you know, feeder cattle are now watching corn very closely on a day-to-day basis. And then narrowly mixed price action in the hog market as well.
Yeah, very good. All right, Brian, thank you so much. That is Pro Farmer editor Brian Grady, right here on Markets Now.
Opinions expressed on AgriTalk do not necessarily reflect the views of Farm Dribble Broadcasting, affiliate stations, or sponsors.
Around these ponds they must have been. Some work like a dog on Friday. On check clock and cash at check. Raise a little hell to Sunday.
All right, welcome back to AgriTalk. Let's switch gears, Davis, shall we?
Let's switch gears.
I think we should. I think we should have a conversation about phosphate. And joining us right now is Ben Pratt. He is the Senior Vice President for Government and Public Affairs at the Mosaic Company. Ben, welcome to AgriTalk. Thank you so much for making time for us.
Chip and Davis, thanks for having me.
Excellent. Okay, we need to talk about something that is awfully important to all of us, and I'm making that comment more to the non-farmers that are listening, Ben, because farmers understand how important phosphates are. But talk quickly, briefly, to the non-farmers out there that might be thinking to themselves, phosphates, come on, why are we talking about this? How important is it?
Well, put most simply, Chip, phosphate fertilizer is essential to the growth of every plant.
Yeah. In other words, it's awfully important to feed us.
It's pretty important to feed us, yeah. You take all the phosphate fertilizer out of the world and you wouldn't have very good crop yields and you wouldn't have enough food.
Right. That's very simply put right there. And there is a battle brewing among the phosphate suppliers around the globe, really. Tell us what, from Mosaic's point of view, tell us what has happened.
Sure, and I'll try to be brief with this one too. We filed an action with the U.S. Department of Commerce earlier in last year, alleging that some of our foreign competitors, particularly in Morocco and Russia, are receiving unfair subsidies from their governments that allow them to sell phosphate fertilizers at low prices and still be profitable, whereas We in the U.S. don't enjoy any of those subsidies. So, for example, in Morocco and in Russia, the producers there are afforded very cheap access to natural gas, which is a key component of making phosphate fertilizers. They, in some cases, pay almost nothing to access the minerals they need to make it. And we, obviously, here in the U.S., we have to own all the land we mine for phosphate fertilizers. So their ability to be profitable was much greater than ours. And so we took this action to defend the U.S. phosphate market from unfair competition. We're not asking for any favors. We just want a level playing field so that the U.S. phosphate industry can remain viable and competitive for the long term.
Right, right.
Mr. Pratt, since you mentioned natural gas sort of being at the heart of this kerfuffle with Russia and Morocco, maybe, I don't know if you can maybe speculate a little bit for us about, are there maybe implications based on this ruling for the larger international fertilizer markets? I'm thinking, you know, could something like this spring up in international nitrogen trade as well?
It's entirely possible. You know, at Mosaic, we make phosphate and potash. We don't make nitrogen, and so I'm not as familiar with the nitrogen markets. But it's entirely possible. And really what's happening here is we're not changing the supply and demand picture globally for phosphates through this action. What we're changing is some trade flows and trying to get a level playing field. If you look back before we filed these petitions, the U.S. phosphates were selling at a significant discount to the global benchmark price.
Yeah.
And that's entirely because of all these imports from Russia and Morocco. And so there's similar impacts on other ag commodities and input commodities is certainly possible.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. Mm-hmm. Davis, you've talked about the pricing of phosphate on here for many years, and having that reliable domestic supply is something that's pretty important to the U.S. farmer, isn't it?
Well, it really is. The reliable supply, of course, to, you know, keep prices in check. And Mr. Pratt, you know, over the years, I've sort of come to view Mosaic in particular as a fairly nimble producer, adjusting production capacities according to market dictates. So I'm wondering, you know, does this situation, how have U.S. and Canadian phosphate producers responded to this duty situation? Has there been any change in the status quo in production?
Not from us. And, you know, we're by far the biggest producer of U.S. phosphates. And, you know, Nutrien also produces some phosphates here, but not nearly to the scale that we do. We have not ramped up production in response to this. I think all we have done to change our approach to the market is to hold shipments that we would otherwise have sent to other countries to make sure we can meet the demand in the U.S.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yep. But to your point, while in the years past we've been forced to curtail production a number of times, and we were in fact forced to close a significant phosphate production facility in Plant City, Florida, because we couldn't compete.
Yep.
Right.
Yep.
Right.
But is there a China connection in here? I know that they've got some DAP operations going. What does it look like for China exports?
Yeah, China is a big exporter of phosphates, and there are different market dynamics at play in China now than these that we're talking about. China's exports, we think, fell a little bit in 2020, somewhere around 9.5 million tons, which is a lot in a global market that's about 65 million tons. The impacts on China phosphates in 2020 were partly driven by COVID. You know, they had to shut production in some places. Some of the production is pretty close to Wuhan. And then also, China is imposing, the government there is imposing a number of new environmental restrictions, which is causing some of their phosphate production to go offline.
Interesting. environmental restrictions. Boy, you're taking me straight to a Biden administration. How does the incoming Biden administration impact your potential operations going forward?
You know, we're assessing that as we move through this process, as everyone is. As it relates to this action that we took, we don't think it'll have an impact on the countervailing duty filing. It's hard for me to imagine any U.S. administration objecting to protecting a critical U.S. industry against against unfair trade policy from other countries. And then the other things to consider for us in the Biden administration are mostly around environmental policy. And right. We would expect that some of the regulations that the Trump administration has undone will be redone. But overall, we take great pride in our environmental performance and sustainability performance, and we don't feel like it's going to be a burdensome change.
Gotcha. How do you think producers might – what impacts of the Biden administration's pullback of some of those environmental issues, how producers might feel the impacts going forward?
I think that there's just the potential in the production side of our business to face some higher costs related to environmental regulation.
Yeah.
On the end user side of fertilizer use, I think there will be a greater focus on water and water quality and potentially on regulation, which has to date been left largely to the states. But it's hard to predict exactly what's coming right now.
Yeah. How's this all going to end up? The
well,
yeah. Go ahead.
Sorry. The U.S. U.S. Commerce Department issued a preliminary ruling a month or so ago, putting preliminary duties on these imports. Now the process goes to the Commerce has to get to a final ruling, which we expect in February, and then the International Trade Commission, U.S. International Trade Commission, is at the same time doing its work to determine how much harm was caused to the U.S. industry by these unfair imports. Their decision is expected in March, and that's when the tariffs would be final and go into place. And the initial rulings were substantial tariffs on the Moroccan and Russian importers. So we expect them to come out with duties that will, to a great extent, level the playing field in the U.S. and let us survive.
Yeah.
Can you speak to what that level playing field looks like at the retail level price-wise for farmers coming up this spring?
Yeah, this spring, I think the phosphate prices have been going up globally because of other dynamics, mostly just a very tight supply and demand picture all over the world. That's mostly driven by very strong demand. So prices are up somewhat, but phosphate fertilizers remain very affordable for farmers. And we, as I said earlier, I think the action we're taking, we would expect to change some trade flows, but not to trade the global supply and demand picture, which over the long term will result in fair and stable prices in the U.S.
Very good. All right. Ben, great information. Thank you so much for making time to come on AgriTalk and explain what's going on. As time goes on and as this develops further, we're going to need to get you back on and get an update for us, okay?
Happy to do that anytime, Chip. Thanks for having me.
Excellent. Thank you so much. All right. That is Ben Pratt. Good grief. That is Ben Pratt from the Mosaic Company. Okay. When we come back, we're going to continue the conversation about what is going on in this country. We've got me, we've got Davis, and maybe John Harith will be joining us next.
On your favorite radio station or your preferred digital device, AgriTalk is live every weekday.
Welcome back to AgriTalk. I'm Chip Flory. Got Davis Michelson with me. Joining us is Farm Journal News Director John Harith. John, thanks for hopping in here. And Tim Barak, Northeast Iowa, is back here. And Tim, thanks for calling back in, because at the end of the last segment, the last segment wasn't big enough for you and Kevin. I screwed that up. That was my fault, because we didn't get a chance to talk about solution and what we need to do with what happened yesterday. What should that launch us into going forward, Tim?
Well, I can tell you what I'm hoping it does, because there's been a lot of frustration, not just with this campaign, but for the last few, in terms of the money spent on campaigns. But 2020 was an incredible year of outside money coming into campaigns, and Iowa is a perfect example in the Senate and House races. Yep. You know, the Iowa Senate race was over $100 million, mm-hmm. and that's unbelievable. So I would like to see, in this 50-50 situation in the Senate, and hopefully in the House, that what I really want is that only money raised within a state can be spent within a state on campaigns.
Love it.
And that would take all the outside money out. It would bring the campaigns back home. It would get rid of 95% of the TV commercials.
Yep.
And it would allow us to get back to reality. I'm not a social media guy, so I can't discuss that, but I sure got sick of it on TV.
And, Tim, I think the other thing that it would do is, you know, you always listen for who the ad is sponsored by, the political ads, or who it's endorsed by. And there are so many times that you see an ad, and it doesn't matter which party it's for, and it infuriates you because it is saying such terrible things about one of the candidates or the other. And then it's sponsored by, you know, some dark money where you have no idea who the group really is. Those that are sponsored by the candidates are more civil. Generally speaking, they're more civil. And
yes,
that would be such a welcome change to how we elect the representatives, the people that represent us. It would be such a welcome. Davis, you heard me go off on this the other day, the campaign reform, mm-hmm. How it is something that is, it is so needed. And I could not agree more with you, Tim, on this. What kind of a leader, Tim, do you think needs to emerge from this?
Well, hopefully all of our elected officials are the leaders. They've all got to be sick of it, Chip. They've all got to be sick of having to raise money. And then they've got, you know, you got your packs that they don't have any control over.
Right.
So they can't even control their own campaigns. They've got to be sick of it. And I don't know if it can get through the First Amendment, but somehow they've got to be able to write a law that should work, that allows free speech, but brings it home. And just,
that's right.
It's just sad the way, and I think that's all part of where the country is today. It's all that money.
Yep.
Just think, we could fund the deficit with the money spent on campaign ads.
Yep.
Think
yep.
of that.
That's
another thing.
Scary.
I thought I've even taken it to the extent, and this is a wild idea, is that 50%, and if they don't have it within the state, then 50% of any money given to a campaign from out of state has to go to the national deficit.
Wow.
Now, that's a wild idea. But
yeah, it is. Yeah, it is. Hey, Tim, stick with us. I want to talk about a couple of other things that John wants to mention and something that I want to get to again. And I said this yesterday. I'm going to say it again right now. The vast majority of the people that showed up for that rally in Washington, D.C. yesterday did not anticipate, were not there to participate in what happened at the Capitol. If the majority of people that went to that rally anticipated it, we would still be trying to get the Capitol building back because it would be filled with thousands of people.
Yeah, and the other thing is, you know, I know a number of Trump supporters. I feel like I've got a pretty good vibe for what they're about. I've never, ever seen one wearing furs and Viking horns and paint his face like Braveheart.
That guy's a professional.
This is what I'm saying.
Right.
Not representative.
Yep. Right. John, I know that you wanted to say something about the Capitol Police.
Well, and I know they're taking a lot of heat, and rightfully so, being woefully underprepared for this event. But I think they should be commended with the restraint that they used yesterday. I know people are drawing comparisons to this event and other events this summer and the use of force. However, I'd say that this outcome is much better. We did have some fatalities, but that number could have been a lot higher yesterday had the Capitol Police not used just extreme restraint in their response.
Right. Now, I want to address
commended for that.
I think they should be as well. That's a great point, and thank you for doing that, John. I do want to address something that Tim brought it up in the first segment. Looking at some of the fraud out there, and you made the comment in one of the, you know, that there have been 62 days in court, and they've all been thrown out regarding taking a look at fraud in some of these states. The problem is there is a belief among a segment of the population. It's a belief that the campaign was stolen, that the election was stolen. And
it's a belief, but it's not a fact.
That may be.
And we need to say that.
Glyphosate is safe too. Okay?
Yes.
And that is scientifically proven. It's got the toxicity of table salt. Beliefs are hard to overcome. They take time to change. We need to continue to work on that change. It's got to. It's time for a transition.
People wanted their day in court. That's what they wanted.
Yep. Thank you, Tim. Hey, come back this afternoon. We got Rick Brock and Associates right here on AgriTalk.